claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
November 9th, 1989. History is made. The Berlin Wall falls. Years pass. Decades end. A new century is born. In 2021, one wall remains at Revolution Radio. The wall between Studio A, the Wisdom Circle, and Studio B, the Raw Deal. The wall falls. History is made. Wisdom Circle plus Raw Deal equals the event. James Fetzer, David Scorpio, Giuseppe Vaffanculo, Brutal Honesty, Chris Winert. History is made. And now, the event.
Well, it's absolutely wonderful to have everyone here. This, of course, is the simulcast of the Wisdom Circle with David Scorpio and Giuseppe Vaffanculo and the Raw Deal with myself. For today, we're featuring Russ Winter of Winter Watch for a return engagement. Russ is quite a brilliant fellow, and I'm very keen to get his assessment on the current state of the union. It appears an attempt to smear Donald Trump by means of a grand jury trial in New York, where Biden is flying migrants, young people, 15, 17, all over the country at the dead of night, and where the California attorney, David Kinney, whom I know well, is now conjecturing Biden is going to introduce a North American Union. You can find it on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. Let me turn over to Giuseppe and Scorpio. More about Scorpio.
Well, it's amazing, too, how they're propping up Groper Joe. As they're saying his popularity rate is over 60%. I'm not buying it. There's no way.
Russ, can you hear the fellas? And
I did. Yeah,
okay.
I'm here.
And gentlemen, okay. Can you hear Russ?
Yes, I can hear Russ. Yes.
Okay, great. All right. Russ, welcome back. It's a crazy week. I guess let's start with Jim's question to you, which is what do you think of this continued globalism controlling, I guess it's actually communitarianism, the bizarre hybrid of Zionism and communism really controlling this federal government and pushing forward this globalist agenda, which is the North American Union, blah, blah, blah. What do you make of all that?
Well, it's kind of a continuation of what we talked about last time. And the term I've been using is anarcho-tyranny.
Right.
Anarcho-tyranny is when you basically fail to defend the average Joe. You know, that that's part of the function of government is to provide protection and police protection for the average citizen. And then to enable criminals and vagabundos and kind of the worst elements, and like you say, flying people in from all over the world. It's right out of Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals book.
Yeah, it's a complete implementation of the despised Kalergi plan. I mean, they just smile at you and move ahead with this. They don't care what the majority of this country wants at all. And it's not just white people, in my opinion. You've got a majority, 81% of blacks who are working class or higher. You've got a majority of the Mexican population who have come here. And they're actually very conservative Catholics, and they don't want this. They want, you know, Asians, growing population sector, majority of them, they all want the same thing, a stable country, a populist commitment to, and the ability to, you know, have the opportunity to live some small sliver of the American dream, work hard, make some money, have some safety and security. It's insane that instead we're watching traitors like the alleged pedophile Joe Biden and his lot in the no longer Democratic Party, more like the Bolshevik 2.0 party, just trying to destroy this country, literally. There's no other way to interpret it.
Yeah, and I actually have a meme that I think is kind of humorous. It's, you know, the whole idea of us being conspiracy theorists is really getting to be a joke. And the meme says, all my conspiracy, does anybody have a spare conspiracy theory? Because all mine have come true. That's what the meme has.
I like that. And of course, I have a recent piece, What's Wrong with Conspiracy Theories, on Oon's Review that has drawn 900 comments. I'm telling you, it's fascinating. Wow. I seem to have struck a nerve. Many are attempting to defend the official narrative of 9/11 in spite of a mass of evidence against it. But where I make the key point that conspiracy theories can be evaluated by the same criteria as scientific theories, including the clarity and precision of the language in which they're expressed, their scope of application for explanation and prediction, the degree to which they're supported empirically by the relevant available evidence, and then the overall simplicity, economy, or elegance with which they achieve that effect, it's very obvious we can go straightforwardly to test conspiracy theories where a crucial element is sorting out the fabricated from the authentic evidence. And when you do that, they tend to fall into place in a very straightforward fashion. I illustrate especially with research on JFK, where we discovered the autopsy x-rays had been altered to conceal a fist-sized blowout at the back of the head, that another brain had been substituted for that of JFK for photographs and diagrams in the National Archives, and that the whole movie, such as the Zapruder, had been massively edited in order to conceal the true causes of death. Once you make those findings, you realize that a whole lot of theories or conjectures fall by the wayside because neither the mafia nor the KGB nor pro or anti-Castro Cubans could have extended their reach into Bethesda Naval Hospital to alter x-rays under the control of medical officers of the U.S. Navy, agents of the Secret Service. None of them could have substituted someone else's brain for that of JFK. None of them could have got their hands on the Zapruder film to edit it, which was completely in control of the Secret Service. Alas, it turns out I've discovered more than 15 indications of Secret Service complicity in setting him up and covering it up. A lot of people just don't want to know. But the whole point being, they use conspiracy theorists to conceal the fact that we are investigating crimes that lead back to the government. So the government wants to discourage people from paying attention to those who would implicate they themselves in these dastardly acts. I think,
well, not only that, Jim Fetzer is not lazy, or he's not lazy at his craft. I'll tell you that. The guy has scored a major interview with James Files that I hope everybody has listened to. So the guy puts his money where his mouth is in terms of being a first class conspiracy theorist, and I salute you for that. I hope everybody. Have you gotten much response from that interview?
From the Files? Yeah, they're a fair number online. Now, it's very interesting about Files because, I mean, I interviewed initially his wife primarily, and then James joined toward the end. I think he was a little skeptical of who I am.
Well, he loved you. You could tell. It was a big love fest.
Madison, he wanted to... I offered to treat him lunch, and he and his wife drove up from Chicago, and we had a wonderful lunch at the Longhorn Steakhouse here in Madison, which I highly recommend. No mask required. Nice. And subsequently, I interviewed him again, and that's the interview to which you're alluding, Russ. It was powerful. I like the guy tremendously, but I'm also convinced he didn't fire the shot he claims to have fired, but is fulfilling a role. Something he emphasized to me during the lunch that stuck with me was, once a government commits itself to a lie, it stuck with it. And early on, of course, we had this theory of there having been a second shooter on the grassy knoll. My conclusion, and I've shared this with him, is that he was playing the role of the second shooter, but that when you look at the technicalities of it, the minutiae of the evidence, he actually did not fire the shot he alleges. I do believe everything else he's telling us about the mob and its collusion with the CIA and every other aspect is spot on. I agree with that completely, Russ.
So, you don't think that Charles Nicoletti got him from the what was the building? The
Daltech
building, and a kind of also simultaneous shot with files kind of hitting him.
I and my colleagues have identified 8 different shooters. I can give you the name, rank, and serial number of the first 6, the shots they fired, the hit they made. Only Damagard has identified the 7th, with which I agree. There was an 8th shooter on the South Knoll opposite the grassy knoll. There's only a single tree there. You wouldn't think it would be even possible a shooter to have been there, but I've seen 2 photographs from 2 JFK students I respect, different photographs of the man with a rifle there. None of them were James Files. And of course, none of them were Lee Oswald either, whom we've established was in the doorway of the book depository at the time the motorcade passed by, which means not only can he have not been the lone demented shooter, he cannot even have been one of the now 8 gunmen who actually fired at JFK.
Yeah, it's interesting. He said that nobody knew how to shoot. He said it's whoever they had... He said, if there were 8 gunmen, nobody knew how to shoot except for him, he said, essentially. He was the only guy that really knew how to handle a weapon.
Well, it's a long story. If you want to check out JFK, who was responsible and why on BitChute, you can see my layout of the shooters I've identified. And, you know, I'm in this ironic position that I like this guy tremendously. I'd even be glad to treat him to lunch again. But as I've explained to him and his wife, she's published 3 different books already. They're really well edited, beautifully presented in support of his position. But I knew the last thing I could do would be to not tell him my candid assessment. And when his wife explained to him my take, he said, well, that's okay. Everyone is entitled to their own theory. So I was very glad, you know, that this is a guy I wouldn't want to have upset with me.
Right. He liked you. He could tell.
It's such an ironic situation.
But it's just so cool that you go out and do that kind of work. It really is. It just lends a lot of credence to the whole school of conspiracy theorists and conspiracy theories that do their work and peel back the onions. And I can't sing your praises enough. I really got a lot out of that. Cause I've always thought that James Files was the man on the grassy knoll. That's always been my theory.
Well, just to support, you know, and I appreciate those kind words, David Mantic and I went together down to Dealey Plaza to consider the idea that a shot had been fired from that curbside sewer opening. Believe it or not, David actually got down inside the sewer and looked out, and we determined that the trajectory was inappropriate. You couldn't have hit Jack from that position. In fact, that shot appears to have been fired from the intersection of the triple underpass and the picket fence. By Frank Sturgis, who may have been the best shot in the world at the time, representing the CIA. We had other shots taken by a Dallas deputy sheriff, by a Dallas police officer tied to the CIA, by an Air Force expert, by an anti-Castro Cuban, by Lyndon Johnson's personal hitman. In other words, each of the groups that were sponsoring the assassination put out their own shooter. This was
amazing. Amazing. Just like a turkey shoot. Wow.
You don't be exposed. So they had powerful reasons not to talk.
You know, the thing that blows my mind the most about your phenomenal decades of research, Professor, is how most people still don't understand that limo, either purposely or not on purpose, blew the turn and had to back up and then pulled over into a predetermined area to allow the turkey shoot, as Russ just said, to happen. That the JFK limousine was actually at a stop for a while, as proven by the police motorcycle escort.
Well, Giuseppe, there are 2 different hesitations or stops, one of which was very substantial. When William Greer, the driver, turned from Houston onto Maine, he mistook the frontage road in front of the book depository for Elm Street and swung out too far, nearly hit a huge concrete abutment, had to pause to get back into line. That's the first. The second is after Jack had been hit in the back by a shot fired from the top of the county records building by this Dallas deputy sheriff named Harry Weatherford, who is firing a Mannlicher Carcano bullet using a .30-06 and a plastic collar known as a sabot. It was only a shallow shot, entered his back about 5.5 inches below the collar. He'd also been hit in the throat by a shot fired through the windshield from inside the triple underpass by this Air Force expert, Jack Lawrence, who was using a weapon I believe was given to him by Curtis LeMay. It was a experimental weapon. It folded up. It would have worked perfectly here. We found an electrical box there in the underpass. It could have been stashed. He made his way back underneath the sewers to the automobile dealership that had put up the cars, and he was all muddy, nauseated by what he had done. It's a really, truly fascinating story. And talk about doing your homework. Of course, I published three early books that really blew apart the cover of Assassination Science in 1998, Murder in Dealey Plaza 2000, and The Great Zapruder Film Hoax in 2003, which even Vince Bugliosi, of course, the celebrated prosecutor Charles Manson, in this 1,500-page volume attempting to resurrect the Warren Commission report, acknowledged mine as the only exclusively scientific books ever published on the assassination. Subsequently, we've had Doug Horn, who was a senior analyst for military records for the Assassination Records Review Board, publish a 5-volume study that I think also falls into that category, and where David Lifton, in his brilliant book, Best Evidence, published in 1980, had, in a way, blazed the trail. I think Lifton's book might be the single most important ever published on the assassination, though I want to hasten to add, Noel Twyman, a retired engineer, published a book called Bloody Treason in 1997. That's absolutely devastating in dissecting how the whole conspiracy was orchestrated with Lyndon, the Joint Chiefs, the FBI, the mafia being brought in. I mean, it's a truly fascinating study. If you can get a copy of that, you'd be well advised to do so if you're serious about JFK research.
And the confluence of all those agencies is what has set the stage for where we are today, because they're all corrupted. And I think it kind of stemmed from this, don't you agree?
Oh, yes. I do 100%. And of course, you know, the use of the media to bamboozle and deceive the American people. It's fascinating. The day of the assassination, on radio and television, reports were coming from Parkland. Malcolm Perry, MD, who had performed a simple tracheostomy incision through the small, clean puncture wound to the throat, described it 3 times as a wound of entry during the Parkland press conference held after the announcement by Malcolm Kilduff that the president had died from a bullet right through the head, pointing to his right temple and attributing that finding to Admiral George Berkeley. So that on radio and television that day, 2 shots were being widely reported. Go check out, for example, NBC, you know, See It Now, or You Were There, talking about the shot to the throat in the first place, and subsequently the shot that entered the right temple and blew out the back of his head in the second. Where when later the story started to dribble in about the gunman having been in the book depository above and behind Frank McGee, who is nobody's fool, says, this is incongruous. How can the man have been shot from in front, from behind? And that, of course, was a conundrum that the Warren Commission had to solve by changing the entry wound to the throat into an exit, moving the wound to the back up to the base of the neck, inventing an anatomically impossible magic bullet theory. Originally that day, the FBI and the Secret Service thought there'd been 3 shots with 3 hits. Jack had been hit in the back, Connolly had been hit in the back, and then Jack had been hit in the back of the head, killing him. But when it turned out that a distant bystander, James Tague, had been injured by a shot that missed, they had to drop one of the three and account for all the wounds on the basis of only two, which led to the very creative work of Arlen Specter and others to fabricate the magic bullet theory, where David W. Mantyk, MD, PhD, the world's leading expert on the medical evidence, has refuted as anatomically impossible by taking a CAT scan of a patient with similar chest and neck dimensions and plotting the official trajectory where cervical vertebrae intervene. And in other words, it would truly have had to be a magic bullet because it was violating the laws of human anatomy and physiology and ballistics. In other words, an absurdity was foisted off upon us. And as I believe Voltaire observed, that they can make us believe absurdities, they can get us to commit atrocities. And I think that's where we are today.
Jim, you don't trust the federal government?
Disillusioning, isn't it?
Can I pose another question? I don't want to dominate the, you know.
No,
the question
dominate here. It, man. Put up.
I'm on for an hour for that. Okay, because this is kind of a good opportunity for me to really speak with one of the greats.
Absolutely.
Have you, Jim, kind of looked at the Hale Boggs, what I consider assassination, whereby he was kind of running up against J. Edgar Hoover before he died and was kind of talking about the FBI defunding them and was making a lot of noise about civil liberties. And he was a team player. You know, he actually had Hale Boggs brought in on the Warren Commission because they thought he would play ball. And eventually he kind of called bullshit on that and was kind of going off the rails. So they literally brought
in Alaska, and I have no doubt he was taken out, Russ. I think your conjecture is perfectly well-founded. He is expressing skepticism. Several members of the commission, by the way, only agreed to support their final, the publication of their findings if it included their own dissents. Richard Russell at Georgia, for example, didn't buy it. During a conversation he had with Lyndon said he didn't buy it either. So they said they would publish their dissenting opinions, and then when it actually went to press, they simply omitted them. I believe, yes, Hale Boggs was taken out. His daughter was Cookie Roberts, who is well known for Cookie Roberts, well known.
No, the Cookie's the better pronunciation. You
know, Cookie, I'm sorry, has carried a lot of water for the deep state.
Cookie
Better.
That's the right one.
About that assassination is they brought the mafia in out of Arizona to do it. They brought this boyfriend of the wife of this congressman Beckage that was on board. And
Let's Scorpio jump in for a second, Russ. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to jump in here. This is a great conversation, and you got Jim going on the Kennedy assassination, so watch out. We're in dangerous territory here. I want to pose both Jim and Russ a question about this. But first, I want to jump back to something Giuseppe said at the very beginning, because it's very relevant. The people that did the assassination of President Kennedy, of course, have never been caught, never been punished, and their behavior is getting more and more extreme and more brazen with each one of these phony events that they pull off on the public. And, Giuseppe, you're talking about really how they're using race, trying to create racial strife at every turn under the guise of social justice and stopping racism. But what they're really doing is increasing racism and making sure that the population stays divided. And this is an old tactic, and it's being used in spades today. But my question for Jim and Russ is that, what do you think the role of Israel was in this? Because, one of the biggest things that was covertly happening was the development of nuclear weapons by Israel, which John Kennedy was 100% against. He said he would do anything to stop it. And also, President Kennedy wanted to force AIPAC to register as a foreign lobby, which of course is another verboten thing. And Michael Collins Piper, in his brilliant book Final Judgment, really did a good job of exposing a lot of the sort of hidden elements. So what, how big do you guys think the role of the Mossad in Israel was in the assassination of President Kennedy?
Well, of course, it played a role. The Mossad, Israel was a sponsor. Yes, JFK was at loggerheads with David Ben-Gurion, who was a founder and the first prime minister of Israel, who wanted to develop nuclear weapons, which JFK opposed. He thought it would set off a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. But they were only one of like nine major players, Scorpio. When I said I identified six, I've got a Dallas deputy sheriff, a Dallas cop. I've got Lyndon's personal hitman, anti-Castro Cuban, a CIA guy, and an Air Force expert. The seventh, whom Oli identified and with whom I agree appears to have been the Israeli hitman, who is in the Pergola area representing the Bronfman family. And then we have one to go, one left, whose identity we haven't sorted out. But what you have to understand the assassination, the best way is to proceed by distinguishing between the sponsors, who included the CIA, because Jack was threatening to shatter it into 1,000 pieces, the Joint Chiefs. They were disillusioned because Jack had refused to invade Cuba against their unanimous recommendation. He'd have gone ahead and signed an above-ground nuclear test ban treaty with the Soviet Union against their unanimous opposition. How he had decided to pull all American troops out of Vietnam by the end of 1964, which they also opposed. So they believed Jack had become an obstacle to dealing with the international expansionists of communism. The mafia, of course, was upset because Bobby was cracking down on organized crime, bringing more indictments and convictions than ever before in history. The anti-Castro Cubans believed they'd been betrayed by Jack at the Bay of Pigs. It was untrue, but it was beneficial to the CIA to let them retain that belief. The Texas oilmen were upset because Jack was willing to cut the oil depletion allowance, a massive write-off they got on the ground that because oil was a finite resource, they were putting themselves out of business by pumping oil out of the ground. The Fed, the Eastern establishment surrounding the Fed, was upset because Jack had gone ahead and directed the Department of Treasury to publish hundreds of United notes at track.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Right, but not the Fed. I suspect that shooter on the South Knoll behind the tree was representing the Eastern establishment and the Fed, because each of them appear to have put up their own shooter. Israel, therefore, had a role here, but it wasn't anything comparable to the major role it had in relation to 9/11. Which appears to have originated in the fertile imagination of Bibi Netanyahu to devise a plan that would convince the American public that the United States needed to send military forces to the Middle East, where they would then be exploited by the Israelis to take out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region and eventually to confront the Persian nation of Iran. So I like Piper's book. I thought he did a great job of separating the old mafia Italian run from the more Jewish Cosa Nostra. But he's wrong. If, you know, Israel did not take the primary role. That designation belongs to Lyndon Johnson, who wanted to become president of all the people. In fact, Phil Nelson has published a brilliant book. You cannot read only, even a few chapters and not understand how ruthless was Lyndon, entitled LBJ, Mastermind of JFK's Assassination. And let me further add, because he would become the president, he was able to give assurances that no one who participated in the eradication, the termination of his predecessor, the 35th president, would ever pay a penalty for having done so. One of the shooters, by the way, a police officer on the grassy knoll who had maybe the easiest shot, would have hit Jackie, and they were under explicit instruction she must not be harmed. So he pulled his shot. The bullet wound up in the grass, where it was picked up by a police lieutenant and never seen again. This is how it went down. He, however, appears to have assassinated as many as 50 witnesses in the aftermath. This fellow is named Roscoe White. He was also the body double for Lee Oswald in the backyard photographs. Larry Rivera, who's been doing cutting-edge research on JFK to this very day, has been brilliant in establishing who it was in the backyard photographs. where Lee Oswald, shown one of them, said it was his face pasted on someone else's body, that he knew something about photography, and with time he'd be able to prove it. They had to take him out, of course, because he knew too much. But Larry Rivera has been able to establish that indeed it was Roscoe White who was the, in fact, Jim Mars and I co-authored an article about the backyard photographs in which he and I agreed that it was Roscoe White who'd been Lee Oswald's body double in the backyard photographs. Larry Rivera, however, has confirmed it, just as he has, that Lee Oswald was standing in the doorway of the book depository when the motorcade passed by.
Yeah, well, Jim, that's excellent stuff. Let me just ask you a brief follow-up question, and then I want to get Russ's response to my original question. So where do you think the genesis of this conspiracy came? Are you saying you think it was Lyndon Johnson and the Texas oil man? Like, where was the genesis of this? Who gave the order to make it happen?
Oh, yeah. Lyndon was the one who brought together all the parties, no question about it. There was a very early film called Executive Action about the Dallas roots of the assassination. Listen, I got to know one of Lyndon's mistresses. He had quite a few. Madeline Duncan Brown, by whom he had a son, Stephen, in 1970. Madeline wrote a book about their relationship entitled Texas in the Morning. She attended the social event. It was actually a ratification at the home of Clint Murchison Sr. the night before the assassination, where it was a relatively small party, but heavy hitters. And late in the evening, Lyndon appeared unexpectedly. They disappeared into a boardroom. About 15 or 20 minutes later, when it broke up, he strode toward her. She thought he was going to whisper sweet nothings in her ear. Instead, he told her in a hateful tone of voice, "I'm not going to have to put up with embarrassment from those Kennedy boys after tomorrow. That's not a threat. That's a promise." The following day of the assassination, he actually called her and repeated that information. She didn't see him again until New Year's Eve, when they had a liaison at the Driscoll Hotel in Austin, Texas. And she confronted him with rumors rampant in Dallas at the time that he'd been involved, since no one stood to gain more personally. Lyndon blew up at her and told her the oil boys and the CIA had decided Jack had to be taken out. But I guarantee you, this was Lyndon's plan from the beginning. It originated back in Los Angeles during the convention when Jack beat LBJ for the presidential. Bobby went by the Lyndon Johnson suite to extend a pro forma invitation that he run as vice president, never expecting the powerful majority leader of the Senate to have the least interest. Instead, Lyndon jumped on it and threatened to expose that Jack suffered from Addison disease, wasn't expected to live a long, healthy life, that among his paramours, and Jack had quite a few, was a beautiful woman who was a spy for East Germany. And furthermore, he added, if he were not on the ticket, then any legislative proposal set down by the White House would be dead on arrival, because as the majority leader, he'd block them. Jack and Bobby were boxed in. He'd already actually extended the invitation to run to Stuart Symington, but gave him overnight to think about it. The only time in his life JFK had to rescind a political decision. When one of Lyndon's powerful backers learned he'd be running with Jack, he burst into the Johnson suite cursing and swearing, outraged. Bobby Baker took him into a bedroom and explained what they had in mind. He came out all smiles and said he thought that was an excellent plan. Bobby Baker would later declare in public that Jack Kennedy would not live out his first term and that he would die a violent death. In the course of events, Lyndon Johnson sent his chief administrative assistant, Cliff Carter, down to Dallas to make sure all the arrangements were in place for the assassination.
Let's get Russ's take on this, on these questions. Russ, go ahead, sir.
Well, I think, it's a rule by committee. It's a committee. In fact, committee isn't a very good word for it. It's a sistema. I call it a crime syndicate. So I don't think that any one party can just unilaterally say, yeah, we're going to assassinate the president of the United States. You'd have to have the whole committee pretty much signing off on it, which is kind of what I think happened. So I think there's plenty of responsibility to be shared in the assassination of Kennedy. But what I'm kind of interested in is sort of the cultural. I've been looking more and more at the cultural infestation, which is really what I think our biggest problem is today. Am I good? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Can you hear them?
Yeah. Anyway, that just kind of went blank. Anyway, the article I wrote that hardly anybody ever read, and I kind of think this is a really excellent article, if I don't say so myself, was called William Langer's Newest History, the OSS and the Frankfurt School, a.k.a. New School. And there was a letter, a CIA letter written by Robert Gates to Bobby Ray Inman, who is the director of the NSA from 77 to 81, and the deputy CIA director in 81, 82. And it details the history of CIA university relations. And I read the document, and it's a frigging smoking gun that just proves the infestation of American intelligence by German Jewish Frankfurt School intellectuals. And he just goes down, this Langer guy, who's the director of research and was the head of the history department at Harvard, was given responsibility for recruiting all these guys in. What they were trying to do is they were trying to organize intelligence against the Nazis. That was the premise. But that just opened the way for a capture of academia, the intelligence organizations, by a really nasty group. I mean, basically all these people that Hitler got out of Germany, the Frankfurt School, came over to Columbia, and Langer, who was the chairman of the history department at Harvard, during his tenure, just put these people into power. And they published a number of the influential studies of diplomatic history, U.S. foreign policy. They did a big examination of U.S. isolationism and kind of turned isolationism on its head as a very, very bad thing, that, you know, the whole idea of America first is now kind of a dirty word. And so they propagandized all that, and they used this Frankfurt School to do it. And very, very slick. And there's just a whole list of sketchy, foreign German Jews, Frankfurt New School mucky mucks that Langer corralled to infest American intelligence. So that's kind of what I see the Jewish-Israeli role more than anything, is this capture of large aspects of intelligence and the academia. And the article just goes through name after name. Some of these people you never even heard of. There's a guy named Newman, who's considered the founder of modern political science in Germany, West Germany. A guy named Frankel, who's a German-Jewish political scientist and socialist, and he lectured at the New School for Social Research. So if you look at this New School, where in the Ivy League, where these guys went, it's heavily dominated by this Frankfurt group that fled Germany. It's an in-group, and they get in there, and they appoint all their buddies. They started running a PhD mill, running all their tribe friends through it and giving them PhD. And that pretty much set the stage for what's called, repression theory and all this idea of introducing Eros, that Michael J. Hoffman, or not Hoffman, but getting bad at names. The whole idea of injecting Eros into your culture stems from this. It's the principle of pleasure and leisure and hedonism, or cultural Marxism, also known as critical theory.
Yeah, let me just add to that the whole idea of this critical race theory is derivative of the Frankfurt School. So I think Russ is spot on there. What I meant was the sponsors all had motives for wanting JFK out. He was threatening to shatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces. I've explained about the military, the Fed, and so forth. The only person, however, could ensure that no one would be punished would be the successor to JFK, namely the vice president, who would assume the office of the presidency. And Johnson, Lyndon, was in the position of coordinating all the efforts. He used to go over to the White House and hobnob with a Secret Service. I'm telling you, the details are very extensive to substantiate that he was the key player. Of course, all these other elements were involved.
Just to be clear, I agree with you 100% on the JFK assassination.
Right.
So no disagreement whatsoever on that.
You guys are talking over each other.
Together, and he did. That's the bottom line.
Go ahead, Russ. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement on the JFK theory that Jim proposes. It was kind of a committee, a group that nobody did it unilaterally. So I guess what I'm talking about is something a little bit separate from that, of how they've taken over society you know, that was a leader, that was a leadership coup d'etat, a very important leadership coup d'etat. But the how did our culture get so dominated by this anti-Christian, anti-small-scale capitalism, the family, the patriarchy, morality, tradition, social, sexual restraint, loyalty, patriotism, nationalism, heredity, ethnic identity, convention, conservatism. Those are all bad, dirty words. You're a fascist if you believe any of those kind of things. And that's what these guys did. That's what this University of Frankfurt group did. And by bringing their quacks and, using Freud and Laswell and Leonard Dobbs and Lewin, Kurt Lewin, Lewin was a critical guy. We talked, last time about Gregory Loukakos. That's the intellect behind this capture of academia by these Jewish refugees from the Frankfurt School, who set all this stuff up. And I think that's what we're really dealing with today, completely separate from the political coup d'etats.
Russ, you're making great points. And of course, you've alluded to Operation Paperclip, where all these members of the Nazi intelligence services and scientists, including Wernher von Braun, were brought into the United States and even incorporated within the CIA. Over and beyond, however, we had Operation Mockingbird, whereby the CIA, which has worked all too closely with the Mossad, would infiltrate the media, such that William Colby, already in 1975, testified to Congress that the CIA owned everyone of any significance in the media. And in the years since, it's only become worse. I have a panel of 100 executives from CNN. Every one of the 100 executives is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. I have another panel, 100 executives from CNN. Every one is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. I have another panel from the New York Times, 100 executives. Every one is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. So we know the power they exercise over Congress through AIPAC. We know they run Hollywood. But they also control our mainstream media. And look how censorship, including by the social media giants, has even made it extraordinarily difficult for critics of what's going on here, all these monstrous, outrageous events, to have their voices even heard because of massive censorship and suppression. So I agree with all that you're saying about this and the intellectual component. Taking control of mainstream media, I believe, has been what has enabled them to manage and manipulate public opinion about these matters and to suppress the critics who are doing their best to explain what's going on. But it's a Sisyphean project, rolling a boulder up a hill, only have it roll back over and start all over again. We're trying to do this again and again and again with very limited partial success.
Yeah, another thing they did is they took over mental health.
And that's the
Tavistock group. So Tavistock personnel came in and took over.
You guys
over
are
that.
Talking over each other. Okay. Let Russ finish and then Scorpio jump in.
Yeah, they took over mental health. Organizations like the World Federation of Mental Health, and that's Tavistock. That's very Tavistockian. And the Tavistockian collaborators were put into the Stanford Research Institute, RAND, the Institute of Social Relations. So then you get into this whole idea of foundations, and foundations being a glue that lets the systema and this crime syndicate do its thing. And then it just all comes to a head when you have this sort of very, very, very strange society today where a guy, and you can just I was watching Saturday Night Live. I had an example of how this plays out. This is just kind of illustrated on a micro level. Saturday Night Live has a performance by this degenerate rapper. Did you see that?
I can't. That show is so bad. I haven't watched it in a decade. But tell us more.
I'm trying to recall the name. Oh yeah, Little Nas G. Now this is what this Tavistockian mental health stuff has led to. So it's just this enthusiastic promotion of the sterile I don't know, homosexual little Gnaz G getting up there and gyrating around, just, you know, totally obscene. And just millions of views on YouTube. And you go down and you kind of read the comments and you just kind of shake your head at this. If this is real, then people have really stooped to a very animalistic low level. Very, very disappointing for me at my age to even see this and read it. And I'm no prude. Don't get me wrong. I've had plenty of fun in my life, but this is just so bad. And then the very same night, they come up with this stupid mocking of Ireland and what's called the Celtic women singers. And they're up there, you know, creating sort of their excuse for humor. So that's a two-edged sword of basically promoting the sterile homosexual little Nas G and his rap music and gyration and simulating, you know, essentially sodomy right there on stage in front of millions of people. And then the same night mocking of Ireland and sort of making fun of white culture. It was sickening. And it's just so blatant. I mean, it's not even any attempt to hide it anymore. That's where this whole Frankfurt School and critical theory and cultural Marxism has come full circle. We've just completely integrated this into entertainment, into media, into culture. And we really in a very, very bad way. And this illustrates it. I was disgusted.
Scorpio, go ahead.
Russ, you've made some tremendous points today. You know, I think this concept of ruling by committee to do the assassination, I think you're spot on. No one group could have done it. Everyone had to sign off on it. I think that's very, very accurate. And, you know, this takeover of mental health really actually began in right after World War II. Edward Bernays was involved in that as well. I mean, this guy, Edward Bernays, was a transformative figure in the Jewish takeover of American culture. It's really quite incredible. But it began in the right after World War II, this takeover of mental health. But by the 1960s is when it really started to manifest in a palpable way. And yeah, you're right. The Frankfurt School, they all settled in Chicago, most of them anyway, which of course was a stronghold for the Rockefellers and all of their grants and money to help promote these people. And I didn't see that episode of Saturday Night Live, but it sounds like the kind of garbage that we're being exposed to, and they're trying to essentially brainwash the masses with on every turn they can.
Yeah, then they brought in Albert Kinsey, who's the, I call him the lying godfather of fraudulent sexual research. And then you bring in Herbert Marcuse, who took this idea of repression. See, what they're trying to do is they're trying to sell everybody that if you repress your animal needs, then you become a fascist. It's sort of neurotic. It's very neurotic because they're worried about somebody, I guess, taking them away and putting them against a wall or putting them into a gas chamber or something. And so they respond to that by going, we have to figure a way to counter fascism. So the term fascism is the big key word that they use. Really what they're saying is just leisure, pleasure, pleasure principle, hedonism should flourish. You know, don't be a straight arrow. And some of that has appeal. I mean, I have to admit when I was younger, some of that had appeal to me, but now I can just see how full circle it's gone. And they just bring in these nasty guys. There's Max Horkheimer, that's more cultural Marxism. And they just love to give each other big circle jerks of citation. So if you ever look at any of their books, they all cite each other. And 80% of them are Jews just citing each other in their books and, you know, creating this fan club of sitting around cheering their great intellect when really it's just pilfering and nonsense. But it's all been taught in spades in what I call a shitstorm universities such as Columbia, Harvard, Princeton, Berkeley, and they use it's institutionalized via foundation grants, like, and the Macy Foundation was key. So I'm kind of, and the end result is a total collapse of live births in the United States. That's the final part of my recent article on this topic. Nobody's giving birth anymore. It's all about little Nas G, you know, sterility.
And of course, that fits a depopulation agenda they're imposing upon us. And all these COVID,
we're getting reports of women who haven't been vaccinated be in the vicinity of persons who have, and leading to miscarriages, stillborn, multiple periods in the same month. I mean, the effects here are horrendous. It looks as though they're going to succeed in a massive depopulation, regardless of what is done from this point on. But it must happen that births are resumed or the extinction of the species is at stake.
Yeah, excellent point. It's just it's just easier for them to deal with robots, you know, because you don't have to worry about a fascist when everybody is in robotics, robotic state. So that, and I think that's what they're all about. It's very satanic and very evil and sort of neurotic. It's kind of hard to pin a finger on it, but that's what's going on.
Well, exactly right, Russ. I mean, essentially what the United States is now in stage four of the internationalist Jew cancer. And so it goes back to the late 19th century when Moses Hess and Theodor Herzl decided that they wanted to take over the United States. And so what did they do? They used their fixer, Samuel Untmeyer, and took care of good old traitorous horn dog Woodrow Wilson and his affair with one of the professor's wives. They paid off the professor, and they said, Woody, you know, we're going to need some favors. And you know what? You got a lot of potential. Maybe we can get you into the presidency of the United States. And they did so. And all of a sudden, hey, we're calling in our favors now, Woody. We need the United States to intervene in World War One, Banker War One, actually. We need to get this Federal Reserve. This has been crazy that your country doesn't have a Jewish-controlled central bank. Woody, we need the Federal Reserve, and we need you to look the other way. And that's what has occurred. And what you have to understand is that what's driving this is a 6,000-year-old satanic death cult who sacrifices children, who members of the cult are incredibly inbred. Everyone is the other internationalist Jews' third or fourth cousin. They have a series of genetic diseases because they're so inbred, and they are psychotically split. Half of them are incredibly arrogant. The other half are incredibly, in these minds, are incredibly insecure. So what they're now rolling out is transforming America into Why America, because they have declared a blood feud on European and white culture. That's why they're using the United States to attack Russia. That's why you know, they've taken over what once was a wonderful country, independent in Canada with no central bank. And that's why we are now seeing the triumph of the weaponized low-life minority, the bearded lesbian, the bizarre transsexual with the fake boobs and all this insane stuff. And Russ Winter, thank you for this hour. It's been spectacular. And Russ will be back again in a couple weeks on Scorpio's show. We'll be back with
Thank
our
you guys.
Listen
Bye-bye.
To Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The Capitol will ever treat us fairly. You are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Bucci to the event where we have a simulcast of Wisdom Circle on Studio Deal on Studio B across Revolution Radio. Adrian and I co-authored an article in Voltaire.org on false flag attacks in Argentina, 1992 and 1994, published in 2009. So we go back many, many years. As a new edition of his book that virtually qualifies as a new book about the role of globalism here in attempting to take over the world, nothing could be more timely than to feature Adrian Salbucci with us today. Private world government enthroned. Adrian, welcome to the show.
Adrian, we cannot hear you.
Adrian, you seem to be muted. Yeah. There.
No. Yeah. He just hit the mute button.
Adrian, you're still muted. We can see the mic muted here. There you go.
I think now should do the trick.
There you go.
Good.
Yes. Okay. Sorry about that. Thank you very much, Jim, for having me on again with you, and thank you so much, Chris and Giuseppe and David Scorpio on the stand.
Yes. Why don't you begin by just giving us a thumbnail sketch of what you are explaining is taking place worldwide in this new edition of your book?
Well, basically, I am taking advantage of the fact that I live in Argentina, and we have a lot of experience, more than you guys over up there in the United States and even in Europe, about coup d'etats, when a group of, in our case, civilians and military took over the government and just swept the ongoing government aside and said, now we're in charge, we're here. And I think that what happened at the beginning of 2020 was a global coup d'etat that imposed a world government upon all of us, with one major difference. We all think that, well, world government sounds nice. We'll have a world president and world senators and world deputies and world representatives, and we'll all go and have a global election one day. But this is not going to happen, because this world government is private, and private world government functions more like a private corporation. The 2 million employees of Amazon or the 1.9 million employees of McDonald's do not get to choose who's going to be the director general, the president of the company. That job is done by the board of directors, who choose the general manager, and the board of directors in turn are chosen by the shareholders who own the company. So our key question today is, who are the owners of planet Earth? And if we pose the question in that way, we start going on the right road to get real answers explaining the dreadful situation we are in right now and why it's going to get worse.
Giuseppe, your thoughts?
Well, I think that is really well stated, Adrian. I'm curious, with a last name like Salbucci, your ancestors came from Italy to Argentina, I would think. Is that correct?
Absolutely. But Argentina is mostly Spanish stock and Italian stock. And my grandparents actually came from Italy. And yes, we've settled here in Argentina. The thing is that I was brought up in New York, or dragged up in New York, depends on how you look at it. And then I lived for many years in London, and I've worked extensively with American and British companies. So I sort of have had an inside look at the whole system. I worked for many years with Lloyd's of London, brokers working with Lloyd's of London, and they have a lot of very good long-term information, and it is that long-term information that when you start seeing the method they use for risk management, as they call it, that also helps to understand why what's happening today is happening in such a horrendous way for the entire planet.
Scorpio, I know you've got all kinds of comments and questions. Go for it.
Well, Adrian, this is really great to talk to you. You know, I remember listening to you back in the old days on Daryl Bradford Smith's show. So it's really an honor to talk to you. I'm currently living in Ecuador, so we're both in South America. And, you know, I think you made a great point that things are going to get worse. And I agree. We've seen a tremendous flexing of the muscles with this global control with Operation COVID. You know, they've got the entire world wearing masks, being afraid, and now rushing to get in line to take this so-called vaccine. Could you maybe expand a little bit about why you think it's going to get worse, and what do you think the next steps are going to be in this plan to essentially enslave humanity?
Well, you know, we have a lot of history. We can look at history, and when Julius Caesar crossed the Rubicon River, that meant, and that stayed as a popular saying, so to speak, he could not go back. Once he crossed the river, he had to go and conquer Rome. There was no turning back. And today, the global power elite, which is basically a small private claque of very, very powerful people whose main power is based on not only that they have a lot of money, but that they control the money. They control the flows of money. They control the central banks. They control the people who make money. Not only that, do they actually possess it and have it themselves. Now, what they are driving at right now is to impose a world government with a whole series of conditions. I think the World Economic Forum, for example, is giving us a good idea of what's in their plans. The Great Reset, the Great Redesign, the Great Reinvention, the Great Re-Experiment, Re-Everything. Everything before is going to be thrown into the dust, into the garbage can, and they're going to do something new. And they've even told us very clearly, in between lines, we're not calling it a new world order anymore. Even though George Bush Sr. and George Bush Jr. and Bill Clinton did, we're not calling it new world order because that sounds a little bit conspiranoid. So we're not going to use that. The new buzzword is the Great Reset, and they make it sound nice. And they even, we've all seen that video saying for Agenda 2030, the World Economic Forum said back in 2016, by 2030, this, you're not going to be, you're not going to own anything, and you're going to be happy. We're going to do this. We're going to print whatever organ you need. And number eight, which is, I think, might be a sign worth following, he said, and you'll be getting ready to go to Mars, which sounds wonderful. And I think the whole Mars deal is part of the psychological warfare attack, because Mars, as we all know, is the god of war, and we are smack in the middle of World War III, where the main front is not military. The main front, the main battle is taking place in the psychological warfare scenario, which means this is a war for your mind. And Mars, where all of a sudden the United States and China and everybody is sending satellites over there and spaceships, and we have a lot of Mars movies with Matt Damon and with a whole lot of people. I think that they are telling us, and it's very interesting, is Mars, as we all know, a lot of us know, has two moons. One of them is called Deimos, and the other one is called Phobos. Now, Deimos in Greek means when you fear something, but it's a true fear. Like, I fear, I'm sitting right in front of a volcano. I fear that it's going to erupt and kill me. And that's a real fear. But Phobos means imaginary fears. That's where phobias come from, the word phobias come from. So what they are doing is they are a real danger, but they are controlling us through fake dangers. They are telling us there's a little thing that if you look it under the microphone, it looks like a sticky sphere. It's called coronavirus, and it mutates every other minute, and it's going to kill you. So stay home, wear a face mask. And like Bill Gates said, God, take the vaccine. They might modify your DNA, but who cares? Take the vaccine. So basically what they are doing is they are imposing global control, where the various nation states, including the White House, the United States of America, I wouldn't even tell you about Argentina, which is a very weak country, we're all subservient to this global world government, which is basically private. And the interests that they are after are private interests. Just let me give you an example of what I'm saying. When I had our military takeovers back in the 70s, especially the last one, there was a lot of censorship. And I myself suffered a lot of repression, censorship by the state. It might have been a regime, but it was the state. Today, the state doesn't really censor you anymore. It's the private companies, since it's a private world government. It's Facebook, it's YouTube, it's Instagram, it's Mark Zuckerberg, Jack Dorsey, Susan Wojcicki. They are the ones who exert censorship. And that's another way of telling you, we run the world. This is a private world government. And you either say what we like, or we'll just erase you.
I think those are terrific points. I've been very puzzled by Mars business. I mean, we can't even get to the moon. The idea of Mars is so ridiculous. But I think Adrian has spelled it out as a distraction, but also a way of revealing, just as they revealed when they had Joe Biden say, we've assembled the greatest voter fraud operation in history. They were telling us the truth in a way that was indirect and circuitous, but telling us nonetheless, because they feel it's their obligation to inform us of what they're doing. And then if we do not take suitable steps to deal with it, we are responsible for the outcome. Giuseppe, your thoughts?
Well, brilliant assessment, Adrian. I salute you for your efforts. And I'm fascinated that you were on the inside and you have the courage to speak out about this, because it's insane to me that the vast majority of Americans want a populist country, want a nationalist focus. And yet, because we all, an interjection right here on all our shows, Scorpio and I, we always say everything you need to know in life, you can learn from the Godfather movies. 1 and 2, 3 was not too good. And as such, the whole idea that the internationalist Jew, the banking Rothschild cabal, is the capo di tutti capi, the captain of all captains, and then they have their right-hand bosses, Big Pharma, Big War, Big Agra, now it's sadly Big Education, and Big Government that they control. What's so insane to me is because, big media, globalist media, that it's gone so far beyond propaganda, it's now gaslighting. They literally mind control the average sheeple. It's tragic. Otherwise, no one would take this injection of genetically tampering material, or as Robert Ravold on Incendiary Radio says, genetically sabotaging injection. And so my question is, how is it that this cancerous cabal in physical numbers is very small? Probably the entire worldwide control is in the hands of maybe 25,000 people. I mean, that doesn't even fill a quarter of a soccer stadium in Argentina or Europe. And yet these people have it all so locked down that they don't have to hide in the shadows anymore. They literally are flaunting the fact that when a president like Donald Trump can be censored on one of their technocratic channels, Twitter, which to me is absurd. If Trump had any real power, he would have marched in there and arrested them the next day. You have no right to censor a United States president. And yet he grabbed his ankles and took it like the New York operator he is. And so my question is, how do they pull this off in your mind? How do they get a vast majority of people who don't want this to go along to get along?
It's a great question. Thank you so much, Giuseppe, which, by the way, I see you too are of Italian stock.
Yes.
And your idea of following up on the Godfather is really a class in how to handle power. An American president over a century ago, Woodrow Wilson, I remember once uttered something along the following lines. When he spoke to powerful people, when he spoke to the business people of his time, the Carnegies, the Morgans, the Rockefellers, and so forth, he said, there was, however, a power way above them and way above the White House itself that made them all speak of that power in a hush, hush tone, because they knew that it was so tremendously powerful. If that was the case 100 years ago, and in the meantime, we've had the Second World War, and we've had the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergs founded in 54, the Trilateral Commission, and all this very, very close-knit network of think tanks in which the Zionist think tanks have a major role to play. And as Stephen Walt from Harvard University and John Mearsheimer from Chicago University said in his great 2007 book, The Israel Lobby and American Foreign Policy, they are so powerful that they have systematically achieved American foreign policy, always giving priority to the national interests of the state of Israel over and above the national interests of the United States of America. All of that being said, I think I can perhaps bring some value in the following sense, speaking from down south as I am doing right now. This is a psychological war. I mean, this is Psy War. We're seeing it fully active. And normally what Psy War does, it is the ability to confuse people, to make them ignorant, to dumb them down, deculturalize them, and so forth. And when you ask the question, how is it that such a small group of 25,000 people are able to control the entire planet and bring about the enthronement of private world government? And again, I can go back to the experience in Argentina. How was it that a small group of military officers and civilian supporters, especially in the press and in companies, maybe they were about 10,000 at the time, were able to impose their will on 25, 26 million Argentinians in 1976, which was our last coup d'etat? And I would give you a very simple answer for that time. It was so obvious when we went out of our houses and down to the street that we saw who had the guns, who had the military trucks, who had the pieces of artillery, who had the jet fighters, the war vessels, who had all the power, who had the illegal detainment centers, the FEMAs of our time back then. So that made people scared, and it made people shut their mouths and walk very, very, very straight. We didn't have any face masks, but people avoided speaking because they knew what could happen to you. Now, the advantage at that time is that we were driven by fear, by demos, by real fear, because you could really be shot. You could be arrested, shot, and just disappear, the desaparecidos we had. Today, it's much more labyrinthical and much more complex because people are not scared of anything real, Deimos. They are scared of something which is imaginary, which is totally unreal, which is phobic. That's why Phobos and Deimos. Keep in mind, I prepared a program, a video in Spanish last year, where I started researching in the last 40 or 50 years, how many movies has Hollywood and Netflix and all the series produced about horrendous pandemics going out of control? Well, I reached a total of 100 films, series of all sorts, and I stopped because it just kept going on and on and on. So we've had predictive programs.
Exactly.
Preparing mankind one of these days, and Bill Gates' 2015 TED conference is an example of it. At some point, even somebody like philanthropist Bill Gates said, I'm not scared of nuclear war, I'm more scared of a pandemic. They prepared us to accept that a pandemic was coming, especially if it was announced by some rather gray-haired man with a white overcoat, who's obviously a scientist, so scientists know. And they very intelligently and shrewdly chose something where it's very difficult to say the opposite. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an epidemiologist. I have no idea. And if anything, I have to say, well, maybe there is a COVID-19. There probably is yet another infectious disease. But it's that important. So the fact that they made it 100, 1,000 times more important means that we are being lied to. So I would say, let's stick to the reality. Maybe there is a new disease. Why not? I mean, I wouldn't go to Africa without taking a malaria or a yellow fever shot. We should be rather careful. But everything above that has another objective. And that other objective is the enthronement of a private world government and all the suffering and the destruction of our individual liberties that it is bringing about, and how difficult it is to combat them, because people are scared to go out on the street. People are scared to show their faces. How on earth can you make a successful revolution of any sort if people walk around hiding their faces, not knowing whether somebody you know or not, not knowing whether that person is smiling at you or showing his or her teeth? So they've really done it right. It's psychological warfare, and we have to start doing exactly the opposite, which is waking people up and unmasking them.
I think your point about private world government is devastating and absolutely central. Scorpio, I know you have many things you want to say. Join.
Well, this is a fantastic conversation. And Adrian, you're just hitting it out of the ballpark with each statement you're making. I wanted to get a little information from you. You know, Argentina doesn't really make the news very often. I'm just curious if you could give us just a little report from on the ground there, what's happening. I know your country's been ravaged by inflation in recent years, created by the central bank cabal to essentially levy a tax upon the people, a hidden tax. That's really all inflation is, through the manipulation of the funny money system. And I was also curious what's happening with this whole Operation COVID. If you know, bodies are stacking up like firewood on the sidewalks, like they want people to believe, or what's actually happening. And I just, one last point before you get to your answer, I'm just really shocked how, you know, this, through this entire COVID process, the only possible solution has always been the vaccine, even though we know that ivermectin works and so does hydroxychloroquine. And Adrian, it's very interesting. In Ecuador, they recently made ivermectin prescription only, even though it's been over-counter drug here forever, because they didn't want people using it as a prophylactic against COVID, if you can believe that.
Can I interject real quick, Adrian? And Scorpio, that it's sad that you think about going to Africa and you have to take an injection from the corrupt big pharma, when all you really need to do is start up an ingestion of quinine like 2 to 3 weeks before you go to Africa, and you're more protected and you have none of the downside of the injection and all its adjuvants and toxic ingredients in it. But people don't understand there's always a better natural solution than what Big Pharma tells them. And go ahead, Adrian.
Absolutely, Giuseppe. I couldn't agree more with you. That's why we are all living through phobic times. We are scared of false perils, of false risks.
Yep.
And we are told the only way you can avoid that, as Bill Gates says, is when everybody has been vaccinated and has taken the vaccine. So we end up thinking that that is the truth. And why do we think that that is the truth? Because nobody listens to any one of us, but everybody listens to Bill Gates. And why does everybody listen to Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg and Joe Dorsey and all these other people? Basically, because they have the controlling factor, which is called money. Yeah. Just as our military made it very clear, hey, everybody in Argentina, we have the guns. We have a monopoly on the guns and the military. So you do anything funny and you'll end up disappearing in a detention center. That was reality 50 years ago or 40 years ago. Today, they are telling us between the lines, we have all the money. So ABC, NBC, CBS, Big Pharma, everybody does what we say. And if there's any doctor who knows a whole lot more than any one of us who thinks differently, we'll just delete him. YouTube will get rid of him. Jack Dorsey will not publish, will not allow Twitter to put that information out there. So we are all today the victims, the prisoners of psychological warfare. It's all part of predictive programming. That's why I was mentioning before, all those hundreds, maybe even more than hundreds of movies and series about horrendous pandemics and horrendous epidemics and horrendous infections for all taste and of all shapes and sizes. Some people like pandemics to appear because that's their good mental outlook through a terrorist group who release a pandemic. Another will say, no, it was an accident. Oh, an accident occurred. Horrendous pandemic with millions and millions of people there. Other people rather say, no, it came from outer space because they like science fiction. Okay, a space alien pandemic if necessary. And a lot of them, and this is Hollywood's sick humor, these infections in about half of all these movies that I was able to discover, they turn you into zombies. And what's a zombie? It's somebody who's dead but is alive, which is the most ridiculous and absurd thing anybody can think of. But the fact that they turn you into zombies is Hollywood's way of saying, you're the zombie and we're laughing at you.
Exactly.
Because all nowadays, people are zombies. They are fast asleep and our job is to wake them up. And to wake them up, we have to really scream and really do something very noisy. If you're in your house and you wake up at 3 a.m. and you see that the house is on fire, you're not going to tell your kids and your wife, hey, wake up. The house is on fire. You're not going to whisper. You're going to shake them. You're going to really get them angry. The first reaction will be, what's wrong with you? Why are you yelling at me? And when people who were asleep suddenly wake up and they realize that the house is on fire, they're going to run for their lives and they're going to do the right thing. That's why our problem today is how do we wake up 90% of the population.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Thank you.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
You're muted, Jim.
Unmute the microphone.
Jim, we're not hearing you. Did you turn your mic off?
Yes, thank you. Yes, as we complete the event today, joining the Wisdom Circle with a raw deal, Scorpio, I know you have many comments and suggestions. Please proceed.
Well, I guess I just first wanted to see if I could get a report from Argentina of what's going on there with the vaccination agenda, the economy, and where Adrian thinks his country is heading here in the short and long term.
Yes, I was going to get back to you to that question, which is really very important, especially in Argentina, which is the country that systematically has inflation, systematically has monetary collapses, systematically has had economic collapses. We've had all sorts of, in my 69 years, I've gone through 4 military coups, 2 wars, and something like 5 financial and economic collapses. So, you know, we sort of know something about this. And the best way to reply to your question, David, regarding the economy, first of all, is yes, we are smack in the middle of another hyperinflation. But a lot of people say, well, what is inflation? What is inflation? This is, I'll put it close to the camera. This is a 1 peso coin, 1 peso. Like you have a dollar, we have the peso. You need 30 of these coins to take a bus ride. Just to give you an example, in downtown Buenos Aires, it costs you 30 pesos at least to make a short bus ride. Yet, this same coin in our Argentine peso currency that has had 13 zeros knocked off of it since 1970, 50 years ago, this would have enabled you to buy Argentina twice in a row. It was so much money. Wow. And yet today, it's absolutely worthless. That's inflation, which is another way of saying we don't have a national currency. And why don't we have a national currency? Because we are not a sovereign country. A sovereign country has to have at least a sovereign currency of some sort or another, like America has with the dollar, even if it is inflated, if like Britain has with the pound sterling, and the way the European Union said, well, let's get together, let's have a euro, which is really a Deutschmark with another name, but we can sort of work with that because the other currencies were fast eroding. So that is the problem we have today, that we have huge economic hardship. When our last military takeover occurred in 1976, at the time, we had practically no foreign debt. Whatever foreign debt we had, which was about $6 billion, could have been paid off with 1 year's harvest, wheat harvest and soya harvest and so forth. And yet today, our national debt is $600 billion, and it's completely impayable. for us within this system, within this absolutely usury and parasitic system, we cannot pay for it. And that's what they have been going after. Because I used the following example. We've all read The Merchant of Venice by William Shakespeare, where Shylock, the usurary Jew in this particular case, used his deal of saying, okay, I'll give you the 33,000 ducats, he tells Antonio, the merchant, but you're going to have to sign this collateral, and the collateral is a 1 pound of your flesh. And Antonio said, okay, no problem, this must be a joke. It was no joke. The day came when he had to pay it back, and he didn't have the money. And the Shylock prepares to take the pound of flesh, even though Antonio's friends during the trial tells him, I'll give you 6,000 ducats. I'll give you much more of your money. And Shylock says, no, I want my pound of flesh. It was legal under the laws of Venice at the time. With Argentina, the same thing. They want to take our territory, notably the Patagonia, which we share with Chile, and which has mining, food, everything you can think of, in a supremely beneficial geographical relationship to Antarctica, which is the continent of the 21st and 22nd century. Keep that in mind. If you take a map and you put Antarctica in the middle, you'll see all water except for a little bit of South Africa, a little bit of Australia, New Zealand, and all of Patagonia. And then you realize that the best access to the Antarctic continent comes from Argentina's and Chile's Patagonia. Add to that the Malvinas, Falkland Islands, and things become very clear why they are doing the things they are doing. What do they want? They want to corner Argentina, which they practically have, to such a completely dreadful situation where they will say, okay, Argentina, you're unable to pay your foreign debt again and again and again. We want the collateral. And what does the collateral mean? We want to have control over your territory. And 20 years ago, and I can send you the information if you like later, the International Monetary Fund, using Argentina as an example, because we had gone into debt default in 2001, 2002, said we need to have a new system, international, supranational system, where countries like Argentina can be like Chapter 11 for countries. They can be brought and they can say, hey, get your act together right. And if they can't get their act together right, we'll just split the company into little pieces and we'll keep what interests us. But for that, they didn't say it, I'm saying this, we need a private world government. Now they have it. 20 years later, they have it. And that is where I think they are edging against us with one specific, really horrendous bit of information. Whilst if it were a military invasion, well, I know millions of Argentinians who would say, hey, we're being invaded. Let's take arms and defend ourselves. But they're doing it with psychological warfare and with local treacherous beings, like the people who have been our presidents and senators and legislators and vice presidents over the past, and ministers over the past 40 years, practically. So these people are just going to sign the agreement. They're going to sign everything and say, yeah, you're right. I think we should give up Argentina to big petrol companies, to big mining companies, to the big pharma companies. And just to make sure people don't think, everybody thinks that they need to have this magic vaccine, as Bill Gates has mentioned it time and again. So the situation is very labyrinthical in terms of thought. And our great hope is that we will be able to awaken enough people in Argentina, as you are trying to do in the United States. But last November's election results has helped to waken a lot of people up over in America. But awakened people are the best counterindication. They are the best remedy to this private world government and all the things that they are trying to impose upon us.
Fantastic.
Yeah, Adrian, that was a great response. And, you know, it's amazing, too, how in the United States, for example, they're constantly, the federal government is constantly pushing racial animus and racial hatred under the guise of social justice or racial justice. But what they're really doing is stirring up racial hatred, making sure that all the different parties are in conflict with one another. Now they have this, oh, the Asians are being attacked. We have to stop that. And oh, the black people, and everyone's divided. And because I think their biggest fear is that people realize you know, who's pulling the strings and who the real enemy is, which is this essentially co-opted federal government that is not serving the for the benefit of the people.
Yes, you know, I fully agree with you, David. And we have to also start making the necessary progress intellectually, because we still think that it's a question of the left against the right against the left, the Democrats or the Republicans, Labour or conservatives in Britain, the Peronistas or the Social Democrats in Argentina. And it is no longer like that. Left and right are like the two pedals on your bicycle that the system uses. First, you step on the left pedal and you push it all the way down. But when you can't push any longer, you start pushing on the right pedal. And that's how they use Republicans and Democrats in America, for example. And that's what gets the bicycle going where they want it to go. Mm-hmm. And we are so busy worrying about whether it's the left pedal Democrats or the right pedal Republicans that we don't realize that they've stolen the bicycle and they're hijacking it and they're taking it to wherever they want. So we have to understand it's no longer a question of left against right, but the top echelon, the 25,000 people Giuseppe was mentioning at the beginning of the program, the top 25,000 usurpers of global power against the rest of us. It's top against lower, the lower masses, not left against right. We have to look at the pyramid in a new way, because what they have today is the monopoly of power given to them, not by arms, but by money, by huge, incredible amounts of money. And the good thing about the book I was mentioning before about the Israel lobby is that they explain very clearly that if there is one thing that cosmopolitan Zionism has, is money power. It's the Goldman Sachs. It's Lawrence Fink from the BlackRock Fund, who is a sitting member of the Board of Trustees of the World Economic Forum. Kristalina Georgieva from the IMF, who is also sitting on the World Economic Forum. It's Christine Lagarde, who is now the governor of the European Central Bank, but who also sat in the International Monetary Fund until a couple of years ago. All the people who either have themselves huge amounts of money, George Soros and Bill Gates and all these other folks, or who run companies or entities that handle money, huge amounts of money, the big hedge funds, the big banks, Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan Chase and all the gigantic banks, who also refeed, you know, they had this sort of a feedback for themselves. American International Group, the big insurance companies, AXA in Europe, Allianz from Germany. It's all these entities coming together. And I can imagine them saying in private, okay, we've got all the money. We can tell all the media to say what we tell them to say. We've got the power to tell the media, don't say this, because if you do, all your advertising will disappear overnight. So we have total control. We don't need to invade Argentina. Why invade Argentina? It looks awful in the 6 o'clock news. We'll just sort of control them fully, make sure that whoever is president, whether it's a left-leaning party or a right-leaning party, whoever is the president of Argentina, he's responsible and he's answerable to us. Like the Council on Foreign Relations says, there's a part where they themselves say, it doesn't matter who wins the elections, we are always in power. And they are, and they've been in power since 1919. And Americans are only realizing this recently. And the same thing with Argentinians and the same thing with Europeans. They've been able to do this very, very subtly and long-term. And what they do is they do things long term. They prepare it. And then when they say, OK, it's time to act, it's a short term thing, like a false flag. You were saying at the very beginning, I think, of the program, talking about 9/11. And I'm writing an article about 9/11 now for an Australian magazine. I found this from ABC News, 6 January 2006. They said 1998 memos were a blueprint for war in the Middle East. Why? Because the project for a new American century designed the whole thing. They had all the neocons there. And they said, and this will only be able to take place if we find and are able to trigger, and I'm reading literally from the project for a new American century, some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. Well, gentlemen, March of last year saw a new Pearl Harbor, but not to bring America into World War II, a new Pearl Harbor to enthrone a global world, a private world government upon all of mankind.
Wow, well said.
Giuseppe. Yeah, Giuseppe.
Brilliant, Adrian. This has just been a wonderful appearance. In fact, between the professor, myself, Scorpio, our resident mentat, Chris Weinert, we have shows on, and we'd like you to come back regularly. This is just outstanding. And for people who are listening and viewing, how can they get your book and how can they support your efforts?
Well, thank you very much. Anybody needs to do is send me an email to A.R. Salbucci. That's A.R.S.A.L.B.U.C.H.I. At gmail.com. A.R. Salbucci at gmail.com. And I'll be more than glad to give them all the information. Actually, most of the material, I'm just giving it away for free because I just want people to be able to spread the word around, so to speak, just as you guys are doing.
Fantastic. Adrian, just to emphasize what may be obvious to many, this is primarily a Zionist Rothschild effort to control the world through the World Economic Forum by a small group of perhaps 6,000 elites who want to impose a private government. I think that's really so crucial to your message. Private government through the World Economic Forum to control the entirety of planet Earth.
Absolutely. Let's say it without any euphemisms. It's the basic Zionist controlling factor. In Argentina, that has gotten me into a lot of trouble. I've had criminal lawsuits brought against me by the DAIA, who were involved in that second explosion you and I wrote about so many years ago, the AMIA DAIA, because AMIA was the social Jewish entity here in Argentina, and DAIA is the political sector. Well, I still have the lawsuit ongoing. But one thing that has to be kept in mind, which I say time and again, is you have to differentiate four key items or factors. First, the Jewish religion goes back to 4,000 years back. I have no problem with anybody's religion, whether Jewish, Protestant, Islamic, Catholic, Christian. I'm personally Catholic, but I'm not a fanatic. Second item, the Jewish people, who are a surprisingly small group of people. By their own numbers, they say they're not even 20 million throughout the whole world. So if there are 20 million Jews in a world with 7.5 billion people, it means that 99.8% of mankind is not Jewish. Third category, Zionism. Zionism is a political doctrine dating back to the 1890s, founded basically by Theodor Herzl, a Jewish lawyer from Vienna, and Leon Pinsker from Russia. Now, Theodor Herzl, in his founding book, The Jewish State, 1898, listen to this. One of the chapters of that book was, where do we put the Jewish state? Palestine or Argentine? So they already had their eyes set on Argentina over 100 years ago. And that worries me, and it worries me a lot. And the third and the fourth category is the State of Israel, which was imposed through Zionist terrorism, the Irgun Tzvi Leumi, who blew up the King David Hotel in Jerusalem with the British, had their government in 1946. It is a direct precedent to the two Jewish attacks that we wrote about, 1992, 1994, here in Buenos Aires. So I see too many events which are no coincidences. They are describing a system. And a system, once you identify it, becomes predictable. Let me just give you a very short 20-second example. If any of you guys, invited me to have coffee with you, and I go over and I spill my cup of coffee on Jim Fetzer's lap, well, Jim will say, oh, it's okay, Adrian, no problem. It was an accident. Bring in more coffee. If they bring in a second round of coffee, and I again throw the coffee on Jim Fetzer's lap, he's going to say, well, Adrian seems to be having a bad day. Let's understand him. But if there's a third round of coffee and I again throw the coffee on your lap, you're going to just get up and say, get this guy out of here. His behavior pattern is that he throws coffee on people's laps. And so you'll know it's a system, and I become predictable. And that is what we have to understand about Zionism. Once, it's an accident. Twice, it's bad luck. three times, I'll even be generous. But when you see that this is systematic, time and again, country after country, then something is wrong somewhere. The reason why the DIA filed suit against me is because I said, look, what are the roots of anti-Semitism? What is it? Why is it that century, millennia after millennia, in all geographies, they are in the long run, they end up being discriminated, often very, very, in a very nasty way. It's either all of mankind is totally crazy, has a mental problem, which makes them irrationally anti-Semitic, or there is something in the behavior pattern of different Jewish communities throughout time and throughout different geographies that leads to the same result from the rest of the people. And that is what needs to be addressed. But today, it's verboten. It's prohibited. You can't do that just about in any country in the world.
I think a message that was embodied in our article about false flag attacks in Argentina is that the Zionists are willing to kill their own people. They're willing to blow up the Jewish community center. They're willing to blow up their own embassy if it's going to promote the Zionist cause. And in the first instance, what, 16 dead, in the second, 84? They're willing to kill other Jews for the sake of promoting their political agenda. They are ruthless. And if they're willing to kill Jews, Goyim, obviously, who don't even count in the Talmudic calculus, can be done in by the thousands and millions. And that's what, in fact, is going on here today, I think, with a great reset and the coronavirus calling, using these perfectly designed killing machines as vaccination to depopulate planet Earth.
Jim, isn't a false flag all about exactly what you just said? It's willing to have your own victims in order to have an excuse to make war against whomever, the Japanese, the Germans, the Iraqis, the Iranians, the Argentinians, whatever. But a false flag, because we are under one of the most horrendous and far-reaching false flag in the history of mankind, it means that they are willing to accept some of their own dying. It's a small cost for a big, big, big profit.
100% correct. Scorpio, I know you have many thoughts.
You're making so many great points, Adrian. You're just knocking it out of the park. And, you know, isn't it interesting, too, with this newest round of so-called, Palestinian attacks on Israel, and most of these rockets somehow mysteriously end up, landing in the middle of nowhere, not doing any damage. But meanwhile, they're saying up to 70,000 Palestinians are homeless as a result of this. Somewhere between 1,000 and 4,000 homes have been destroyed. And, the last count, I believe 66 children were killed. And I think this is an absolute indication of their coffee spilling behavior, let's say. And I think it's a PR disaster for Israel now, because it's getting more and more difficult to sweep this kind of atrocities under the rug with the internet and the instant access of information that people have.
Absolutely. And that Benjamin Netanyahu has a lot of opposition within Israel, because many more stable Jews are realizing this guy is like the guy who, like the boy that cried wolf. You can get away with it once, twice, but in the long run, when the wolf really comes, they won't be able to get away with it. Naturally, they think that they have so much control over the United States, both under Trump and under Biden. They think they have so much control over the European Union. They think that they can keep China and Russia sufficiently at bay so that they can still get away with it. Naturally, they have full control over the Middle East, and they have their huge money power, which is what runs the huge mass media, the mainstream media systems. And they also have Mark Zuckerberg working for them, Susan Wojcicki working for them. They have Jack Dorsey working for them. So basically, they figure we've got all the pieces of chess in our power. One of them might have a little bit of a problem, and probably that since they are so shrewd, they know that if necessary, and we have to do away with Netanyahu, they will. They will. They will say, okay, Netanyahu, go home. We'll bring somebody new in who will be more credible than you. So we have to be very careful and understand, and you've made a great point David, we have to not only know what our potential powers are, but as in all strategic planning, we have to understand and discover our own strengths, but also the weaknesses of the enemy. And today, they have a lot of weaknesses. That's why they are so rushed. That's why they are doing so many things that are obvious. They seem to be in a rush. I'm not quite sure why yet, but something is rushing them. And I think the more we know about why they are so hysterical, so nervous, so rushed, will become a strength for us, because nowadays information counts, and information counts knowing where I stand and what I can do, but also understanding where the enemy stands and what they really can do. And very often it's not what they say they can do, it's what they really can do, and it's up to us to find out and unmask them. As a matter of fact, if instead of 5 or 10% of the people, if 70% of the people were awakened nowadays and did away with the face mask and wouldn't dare go near a vaccine center or something like that, that would be a horrendous weakness for them. So they know that their weak point directly lies with people waking up. And that is their greatest danger right now.
Giuseppe, any loose ends, and give us some wisdom from the wisdom circle.
Well, I just am blown away and impressed by Adrian Salbucci, and look forward to more conversations. And my final thought is, just like with the learned protocols of the Elders of Zion, they never denied it. They just claimed it was a forgery. And right now, if you point out the type of topics we've covered in the last hour, you're an anti-Semite, or you're they never deny that they're doing it. They just use ad hominem insults. And so I think that hopefully, slowly, more and more people are waking up. We're doing our part. And I just want to thank you for a phenomenal appearance and look forward to having you on all our shows soon.
Scorpio, your closing thoughts.
Yes, Adrian, just a brilliant interview. And I just want to thank you for all the interviews you've done in the past. You know, you've been so consistent and spot on throughout your entire period of, you know, revelations, essentially. And you've done a lot to help humanity. And I want to commend you for that. And I just look forward to talking to you again. Please consider yourself a friend of the show, and we'll be talking again soon if you're willing.
Recall now the email address, arsalbucci@gmail.com, arsalbucci@gmail.com, to obtain a copy. Adrian will spell it all out. Your final thoughts, Adrian? It's been a joy.
The pleasure's been mine. Thank you very much, gentlemen, Giuseppe, David, Jim, especially you, Jim, who got me on the show to begin with. And I never would have been able to speak to you guys if it weren't for my good friend Jim Fetzer from so many years. And yes, Daryl Bradford Smith, that David mentioned, is a great personal friend of mine for 20 years now. And I'm very thankful. Count with me for anything you need. And I really thank you for the opportunity to speak to you.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations.
Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was...